My name is Charisse Clark Suarez, founder and CEO of Harborview Equity Partners, and you're watching World Music Views. Hi, JR. How are you?
Hi, Charisse. Finally.
I know. Sorry for the delay.
No, I definitely understand. I've been keeping up with all your moves. I probably know more about your life than you do.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, the way I'm fully invested in Harborview's progress.
Yay, good. Well, we need you to be. We need people rooting for us to be successful.
Yep.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
So World Music, let me tell you a little bit about what World Music Views is. World Music Views, we are a media publication that deals with music and music business for niche genres, reggae, dancehall, as you know, that's Jamaican thing. But we also deal with Afrobeats, which is an emerging genre, and reggaeton, which, as you know, comes from reggae dancehall. So when I saw, I'm a subscriber of the Financial Times. And when I saw your article first in the Financial Times, I'm like, wow, this is exactly what I'm doing. Because I also have another show with the Jamaica Stock Exchange called The Business and Entertainment Show. But I love what you're doing. First of all, tell us your Jamaican background and how did you get your current job?
Okay, awesome. Well, I grew up as a first generation American in Queens, New York. For those who know Queens, and you know that it's a mezcla of immigrant communities where Caribbean and West African, cultures have a very strong influence. I grew up in Rosedale, Queens, which for those of you who know, is on the border of Long Island and Queens. My parents immigrated to the United States and in the early 70s. So I grew up as, a New Yorker, and I know I'm a fake Jamaican to many of you who believe that unless you're born in Jamaica, you're originally and from Jamaica. But I did grow up with a very heavy influence of Jamaican culture in my life, in my concentric circles and friends and otherwise, and also grew up going back home, as we call it, every summer, multiple times a year. And so that's sort of my history of how I grew up. I think, the story to starting Harborview is a journeyed one, but it feels very much so like a destined one. My dad was an entrepreneur, so growing up watching my dad be an entrepreneur in real estate in Queens was something that, really inspired me to be thoughtful about how can I be impactful? How can I lead? I always thought that I would be an entrepreneur because I grew up in finance, grew up on Wall Street, working at Morgan Stanley for the better part of two decades. But as time progressed, opportunities provided itself for me to sort of really launch out on my own. And so without giving kind of all of the sort of puts and takes, I would say that really just having a real eye towards keeping, the destination in, front and center, even though the journey may be storied or change and shift over time, so that as opportunities present itself, you know when to grab it, which was sort of the case in my story.
So you took the unconventional route, which most Jamaicans who go abroad to live, they either end up in restaurant business, the music business, or they end up in finance. You end up in finance, but also the music business. That route, were you ever tempted earlier before you got into finance to just do music? Cause that's our edge, sports and entertainment. That's Jamaica's winning edge in the world. Were you ever tempted to be like, mommy, I want to be a runner, or I want to be something in the music industry?
I, again, credit my parents. So my mom took me piano lessons every week, multiple times a week for about 15 years of my life. So culture was always a very big and strong part of what I did. We went and saw, Alvin Ailey every Christmas at City Center here. We watched and loved and engaged in, Caribbean culture. So, Oliver Samuels was a big thing growing up. So culture was always a heartbeat for me. It was a thing that I did. I tell people all the time, it's almost like I minored in the arts and education when I went to college. But I really loved who I could be to culture. I really always wanted to be fuel. I, you know, my one sad credit is I was in Above the Rim as a kid, as a cheerleader in the movie. You know, me and my friends, we all went to.
Whoa, you're not just going to skip over that. You were in Above the Rim.
I was in Above the Rim. Yeah, go check the credit.
Never would have seen. We're putting it right here.
I don't know, but you can check the credit. But it wasn't really my ministry to really be in front of the camera, right? It was really my destiny to be fuel. I think where one of the things for me that I think I really thrive in is really being thoughtful around strategically how to build things, how to do things. And finance was my fluency. I went to Georgetown on undergrad, and I was an undergraduate business school major. And for those who don't know the undergraduate business school program at Georgetown, you're doing corporate finance in your first semester of freshman year. So I tell people all the time, I've been running around with my HP 12C since I was 17, you know, the equivalent of being a child in diapers. So I'm very fluent in the topics of finance, but I had a love and a passion for culture. And how can I merge those two things together to create opportunities to do transactional work, to be fuel for culture? And so it has never really occurred to me to be in front of the camera. I shy away from it. I don't really like it. In building a business, I know that I'm the spokesperson for our firm. And so as a consequence, I have to do that. But it's not really ever been the thing that I wanted to do. So I've been fortunate to have a process that allows me to really do that.
So you were at Morgan Stanley, and that's you working for someone, and then you moved into starting your own company, and you named it after Harbor View, which is the Jamaican roundabout before you get to the airport. How significant was that to you, and why Harbor View? What's the metaphor there?
Yeah, so look, I mean, one of the things that I find really powerful in life is when people can live authentically to who they are. And I think that's true about Jamaica. I think that's why our culture is so core to value that we create, because at the end of the day, it's so authentic to who we are. And that travels. That's why it travels around the world. So that's who I am, right? And so when you sort of take a step back and peel back the next layer of that onion, I am the child of my parents. My father and his siblings grew up in Harbor View. My grandparents and my aunt, you know, my aunt came back from her studies in Europe and Canada and helped her parents buy their first home in Harbor View. It was like the first settlement that was built for home ownership after independence from the British. And in that settlement, when I talk to diaspora, you know, people of the diaspora that live here who are first generation or second generation children of, you know, people who settled in Harbor View, you know, are that spirit of seeing boundless, you know, horizons, and also really being, you know, a point of hope and creating and building for that next generation, which was sort of what they were doing when they bought that home, when they have that deed. My aunt on another side of the family, also her mother bought her first home in Harbor View. They still have the deed, and it's yellowing and it's paper, and it's, you know, they paid $5,000 for the house. We're not talking about people who come from lots, but who are of modest means and making moves towards building better and more. And so that the nature of Harbor View is really kind of that. And so when I looked around and said, how do I want to, you know, build the company, in what likeness do I want to build it? It was in that likeness. And so we named the company Harbor View for that. My dad and his siblings grew up there on Nautilus Avenue. And it's been a big part of me growing up. I went to see my grandmother there, you know, every summer, and spent time in those spaces and saw, you know, the struggle, right? Like on my mother's side, my grandmother came to the United States and scrubbed floors to pave a way to sponsor her children to come up and build a life here. In Jamaica, my grandfather pushed an ice cart to send his daughter to college in Europe and in Canada and to be educated there and to be the first person to work in a bank and to work on Wall Street and do those things. And all of that is sort of the culmination of why, you know, I really felt like it was important for me to keep that centered in what we're building. The goal for Harborview is to be a private equity and asset management firm focused on the things that I know well, which is finance and culture, right? So we invest in music, we invest across the entertainment media spectrum, but keeping that centered as to, yeah, it's small. It may feel small to others today, right? Like we've done a nice job. We manage over $1 billion of AUM, but we are so small relative to the big guys, but it's about that vision of what's out there and how we can build with that spirit of hopefulness and that spirit of endless and boundless opportunities that you see when you look out on a horizon.
So what my job with World Music Views is to connect money to culture. My book, Cultural Capital to Financial Capital, is celebrating its 1 year anniversary today. And it's really about how to turn culture into money. I was piqued by your interest in reggaeton music. I realize you haven't bought any reggae music as yet, but there is one piece of music, Louis Fonsi. You bought Louis Fonsi's catalog, which is the subject of some litigation ongoing with Steely and Cleavey. Two questions I have for that. One, are you going to buy some reggae catalogs in the future? Because I know a few people who have sizable catalogs that I interview here. And two, what are your thoughts on reggaeton's exploitation of reggae music over the years, and how do you see Harborview playing a role in giving back?
Yeah, absolutely. So we love local music and diasporic music. And what I mean by that is it really is a reflection of the world. And we think it has the ability to grow and to scale globally, particularly as the diaspora of second and third generation and beyond become participants in the music and the culture. One of the beautiful things about Jamaica, right, like is that we, our culture punches well above its weight, right? Like, you know, Jamaica is a known brand globally. You know, for such a small country, the diaspora and the heritage really has the power to transcend in so many spaces. So recognizing that power and that authenticity and the ability that it has to travel around the world and shape hearts and minds is core to who I am and what we believe in. So we'll be excited to do things in the reggae space. We've looked at several opportunities, and we believe that we'll have opportunities in our portfolio soon. So things like Latin music, which we know, you know, has a derivative, particularly from, like, let's take it all the way back, right, centered in African music, right, and in sub-Saharan Africa, like all of these sounds are actually connected by the transatlantic, you know, slave trade at the end of the day, if we're really being honest about it. And so, you know, we see ourselves as investors in the culture, but also as culture protectors. So you'll see more to come from us on those things, and us doing more here and wanting to make sure that people participate fully in the culture that they create and fully in the economic opportunity for that. And our goal is really to just be fuel around all of it.
I love that. What are your choices? Like when you're buying a catalog, like you bought Usher's share in Justin Bieber's catalog, you bought Louis Fonsi, drop $100 million. That's not easy money to use probably, but when people see that supporter. When people see that headline, they're like, wow, $100 million? What goes into the thought of valuing a catalog? How do you get to that figure to give Usher 40 mil for a piece of a catalog? How do you get to that figure?
Yeah, so one, I just go on record saying that those are numbers that are reported, but they may, you know, we have not given those numbers to anyone in the press. So they may or may not be accurate. So
okay.
Let's just...
Okay.
and then second, I'd say, you know, we are very much so investors in the space. And so what that means is that we take a very... fiduciary. Let me take a step back. Who do I serve? Right. as an investor, we serve, you know, the people of, you know, LA County. They're an LP in our ecosystem. They're a client of ours. We serve endowments and foundations who are doing really important work to give back to their communities. So our job is to make great investments and to deliver great value back to our investors, but also to do it in a way that we believe is equitable. And we believe that really encourages people to want to continue to deliver really great value on a go-forward basis. So that's our job. And in order to do our job, we take that very seriously. We do a lot of financial analysis on what the catalog has done and how it's performed in the past. We want to make sure that we are taking into consideration future trends. We take into consideration how it impacts our portfolio as a whole. And then we kind of put all that together and kind of come to a conclusion as to what we're willing to pay for it, taking into consideration that our first job is to serve, you know, our clients and deliver a really great return to them, who, again, are people who are looking to live retirement with dignity, who are doing good work in the world by giving back to their communities. And so while we're not a non-for-profit by any stretch of the imagination, our for-profit organization is to create profits and to create return for those organizations. That's our first job. But our other job, and we believe this is part and parcel to delivering that return, our other job is to pay a fair price and to be good partners to the people that we partner with. And when we do that, we believe that they deliver even more value for the people that we serve. So that's the work that we do. We do deep financial analysis with that in mind. We have no desire to force anyone to sell before they're ready. We tell people all the time, we're never going to, you know, pressure anybody to do a sale. We can tell you what we can do at a point in time. But if you want to sell in 3 weeks, we move really quickly. If you want to sell in 5 years, we'll be here in 5 years, right? We're building an institution that is a resident investor in culture and entertainment and a culture protector. And so that's kind of the way, that's our process. So hopefully that helps.
What's your dream catalog to buy? Bob Marley is already out.
Well, I mean, listen, what I like to tell people all the time is, and back to kind of likening to my experience, right? As a first generation American, I grew up on Sunday mornings, listen to Byron Lee and the Dragonaires, or listening to Bob, or that's what we were listening to in our home. And so when you take that and multiply that by billions of people around the world, you know that local experience. That local experience is like, it's so close to your heart. So we're very focused on almost being agnostic to the music that we buy, i.e., I don't have to know it, right? Because I was listening to Byron Lee and the Dragonaires while I grew up knowing, you know, Born in the USA, and who doesn't love that song by Bruce Springsteen, massive classic. There's probably a lot of people who listen to and love Bruce Springsteen that had no idea what Tiny Whiny was, right? They have no idea what it was to listen to Kaya, you know, deep in the Bob catalog. So understanding that, that means that my experience multiplied by billions of people around the world, but also diversified by their local experience, means that we can buy anything that resonates with an audience, right? So what does that mean in turn? I got a lot of heavy metal music because the heavy metal audience is like super engaged and loves the music. And we're super excited to support and buy music in that culture. We have a lot of hip hop and R&B because there's a lot of great engagement in that audience. Super excited about things in the reggaeton, reggae, Afrobeats diaspora, because we know people are really excited about that. We've looked at things in the K-pop segments, but we've also looked at things like Justin Bieber, global, you know, pop star, an iconic pop star. So we're very much so agnostic, but being agnostic is not because we don't recognize that music is deeply personal to your experience. And that doesn't make it any less validated because UJR don't know it, or I, Sharice, don't know it, or conversely, people don't know the music that we knew and loved growing up, or that we know and love today, right? Like, there's a lot of really great new music today that speaks to our audiences that we think is amazing. So I don't know that I have the dream catalog that we want to go by. I know that we love music. We love how important it is to people's lives and how important it is to their experience. It has so much emotional context, right? Like we all have the soundtrack to our lives. We know what we were listening to when that really monumental moment happened to us, either at the birth of a loved one or at the loss of a loved one, at our weddings, at our funerals, at our church services and graduation services, or just waking up in September in the fall as you're going back to school. What was the soundtrack that you were listening to that motivates you? So music is so deeply personal that for us, it's really about finding things that have an audience, and that audience is engaged and excited, and we're excited to be a part of that.
The new music, as you mentioned, new music that you don't listen to, is heinous. There's a lot of violence in it, both drill. In Jamaica, I don't know if you know about Trap Hall, which is a new version of dancehall, where they're talking about scamming, they're talking about killing people, chopping off them head. It's very heinous. It has not taken off internationally yet. Are you familiar with this kind of music? Because hip-hop kind of have some of that, but there's a new hip-hop called drill hip-hop, where artists are literally documenting murders. They're singing about it. Are there catalogs that you wouldn't buy based on the content of the song? And this is a local question, really. Do you see those kinds of music going anywhere to the valuation that you would have, you know, willing to spend $100 million on?
Well, let's say this again, we're like not here to be judge and jury on culture. We're not here to be judge and jury on lyrics. I do think that we take very seriously who we are to each other as a company. So that's an internal view. And then who we want to be to the world. And what we want to be to the world is one that protects culture and invests in it and fuels it. And so, look, I mean, I think from that perspective, it really is watching, seeing, listening to how audiences respond. If their audiences are growing around music like that, why are they responding to music like that? What does that say about broader culture? What does that say about things that we should be paying attention to as a society? But we really do kind of evaluate each and every opportunity through this lens of, who is it to the culture? What does it mean to what does it say about who we are? How do we think about the value? How do we think about that value being protected over time? And some of those things, as you said, you know, they are parts of the subculture. And so it's, you know, they may not necessarily take off. And so I'm rooting for society to want to see good over evil. And so that's, I think, what I would say about that.
Oh, that's a lovely answer. You were just awarded Billboard's one of Billboard's top 100 women. What does that mean for you? And how is Harborview helping with female empowerment and having a strong? I mean, you're doing it. You're killing the game, by the way. But I'm sure there are lots of women coming up looking at you. Like, oh, one day I want to be Charisse, you know? What is Harborview doing to help women, especially in the music business? And also just tell me, how does it feel to be one of Billboard's top 100 powerful women? I claim you as Jamaican, by the way. So powerful Jamaican woman.
Well, I mean, listen, it's quite an honor to be on the Billboard Power 100. I mean, I think my contemporaries who are on that list, both male and female are on that list, are people that I've long respected in the music business and continue to respect and continue to aspire to be like. So, you know, it's very humbling to be engaged in that space. I'd say as it relates to women and women investors, my entire time growing up as a finance professional has been colored by and influenced by women of color in particular. So for me, really focusing on making sure how I can create an infrastructure and a platform that allows people to see themselves is what I've been really, really focused on. So if you look at our team, I would tell you that our team is intentionally, the table is intentionally set the way that you see it, which is to say, especially, I think this is also a little bit of the Jamaican culture breeding through, right? Like, you know, we all know that we say out of many, one people, right? And that is 100% the way that we see our team. So our team, we try to make sure that everybody has a mirror to look into and a window to look out of, right? And so what that means is they can see themselves, but then they can also look out the window and learn from someone else too. That's really, really critical to us. So our team has a number of senior women across the business. It has a number of senior men across the business. We are kind of, you know, a large, you know, probably majority people of color, but we also have people, you know, non-people of color on the team. We're really proud of that. We have multiple religious faiths on our team. It is important because culture is a reflection of the world. And so as we're investing in culture, it's really important that we understand, you know, all the various places that amazing culture can emerge from and being centered that way. So for me, it's one, hopefully being a beacon of hope. I want more women to join me on this journey, whether in the music business, to be in the C-suite, or in particular in private equity and in finance and Wall Street, to be on this journey, to be in the C-suite. That's really important to me. But I also want to make sure that we include in our narrative, in our voices, in our thesis, in our questioning every single day, the perspectives of the world, because I think it makes us better investors, it makes us better culture protectors, and how we go off and build Harborview as an institution.
Wow, I'm learning so much from you right now. This is my second to last question, because we got 7 minutes.
Okay.
How do you see AI affecting how music is valued going forward? Do you feel threatened by AI? Do you think, oh, I probably need to spend $50 million on that Louis funds because AI is going to sing over the song? Or you see it as something that you're going to use, incorporate, and even add more value to the music?
Yeah, so I don't live in fear. I'd say we are long duration owners of IP. And IP, we believe, has value over decades, right? Like, you know, what's the big Bob album that was released in 1976? But, you know,
1973 was Catch a Fire's first album, which never even sold. It's the 50th anniversary last week, by the way.
Right. So just to understand that iconic things, music, things that resonate with culture, and sometimes they catch on early, sometimes, to your point, they catch on late. These things have the indelible ability to last for a very long time. What's happened since 1973 from a technology perspective? Lots of things that should have killed it all dead. First, we went from releasing in vinyl. Then we're releasing on records and, you know, cassette tapes. And people are making, burning cassette tapes and doing their own mixtapes, to then buying digitally, to then having it on streaming platforms, to then seeing it on YouTube, to then having it in TikTok, to then having it in gaming platforms, to then now talking about things like AI. NFTs, by the way, we had a moment in the NFT moment as well. So I don't live in fear. I think technology really actually expands the opportunities for IP. It doesn't contract it. Will there be disruption? Probably. Will there be things like, you know, a fake Drake song, you know, that's been created over the last few weeks? Yes. Is that something that needs to be corrected in the moment? Yes. But is there something that will come and emerge from this that will increase how we engage with music and with IP? I believe so.
Okay. My last question is, give me your top 5 albums of all time.
Oh, good Lord. How can they want to even choose top 5 albums of all time? Oh my goodness.
I know there's a gospel in there somewhere.
Just what?
As a Jamaican, I feel that there's a gospel album in there somewhere.
Well, I will disappoint you in that one. I love gospel music, but I don't think I have an album, right? Okay. I've got songs in my head, but I don't necessarily have an album. But you're right. You know, faith is like a key portion of who we are as a people. Gosh, I mean, I love, you know, Stevie Wonder's Songs in the Key of Life. I mean, that's like favorite of all time, like, you know, very, very strong. Exodus is a big album for me as it relates to, you know, Bob Marley, like huge, huge, huge thing that I love. you know, Buju's, what's Buju's big song? Which one?
Till Shiloh.
Oh, please. We could sing the whole album from cover to cover. Okay. Till Shiloh will have the whole place going crazy. Who doesn't love Barris? I don't know. I can't pick a Barris album, but who's not, you know, Uncle Barris, if you're listening, I'm being a huge fan. I stood.
He's definitely listening.
Oh, yeah. I stood at what's that park over Christmas.
Oh, you were there?
Oh, Lord Jesus. He didn't come on until 1:30 and Buju didn't come on until 2:30. Yeah, I was there. I was there.
Oh, wow.
So you were
in the traffic.
Lord have mercy. 3 hours. I was only staying down the road 15 minutes with no traffic. 3 hours. But I got there at 11 thinking, okay, well, great. They're about to come on. No, we stood outside for another 3 hours before the show started. That's okay. Okay. You know, it's part of the culture. I'm here
for it. Definitely got to come back this year. It's happening this year again.
Okay. Gosh, what else do I love? I mean, it feels so hard to basically say a fifth album, I mean, of all time. I mean, it's got to be off Michael Jackson's, off the
wall.
So, I mean, listen, but if you ask me next week, that vibe might change because music is just, it's just so fulfilling, right? Like there's so much new things that's amazing. Like, you know, new artists who aren't even new anymore, but Beyonce is a favorite for me. I could run those things back to back. NDRE is a favorite for me, run that back. Who was Jill Scott? I could run it back to back. There's just so many places to go in music that could be, you know, that is super interesting and super amazing. So those are my things that I would call upon if I was opening up my Spotify app right now and trying to figure out a thing to listen to.
I love it so much. I learned so much and I thank you so much for this conversation.
No, thank you. Thank you so much, JR. I look forward to future conversations and thank you for rooting for Harbor View to be successful. And, you know, we look forward to building more and doing more together. Okay. Thank you so much. Talk soon.
Thank you so much. This was dope.